You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Would you like to ask or share anything? Okay, so I'll start with something that, oh yeah, sorry, come close. I notice some things in me as a little, like, why are you, so many of you sitting up? If we could be in a mood of some sort of caravan tea stop. Just a little more than a week ago, I was doing a retreat in a desert, and we were in this, the hall was kind of like this, but sort of bamboo and black plastic, and we had these windstorms. And being inside this tent in the desert in the wind, there was a lot of creaking and flapping, and it felt a lot like being on a ship. And I felt like the teaching's time was like on this long journey that we're on in this ship. This is the storytelling time. So just feeling inside where this is just, this talking part is just an accompaniment on our journey. It's not actually doing anything. It's not paddling the boat or anything. So yesterday I talked about from the work called focusing, the example of the feeling I've forgotten something as an example of how we could kind of feel not so sure, but something I've forgotten, I think. And giving it time, it can come clear. And what I meant to get to yesterday also, so similar to the feeling I've forgotten something in terms of the timing, like the gradualness and the nonverbalness of that process of Maybe I've forgotten something. What could it be? Is the idea of getting into a rhythm. Getting into a rhythm. Getting into a rhythm, let's say, for example, like walking or jogging or swimming or dancing. Let's start with that kind of example of physical activity. There's just a natural process of getting into a rhythm. Warming up, even if you're a really good dancer or runner or swimmer, there's still a process of getting into a rhythm. And when we're not a really good dancer or swimmer, even more, giving time to get into a rhythm. And so just, if you can remember a time, okay, you were going on a walk, or you were starting to climb up the mountain, and it was different the first few steps, and then the next few steps, and it's a process. That's partly body and partly mind, partly the body affecting the mind, partly the mind affecting the body, maybe. And partly the situation affecting the body and mind. And so I noticed when my kids were little and we were setting up an eco place that was, everything was broken, and yet we were living there and raising babies and also trying to fix the roof and the toilet and everything. And not knowing anything about building. And eventually, funny enough, it was because of something that was hurting in my back or hip. And what seemed to be what would help would actually be to go jogging. It was a little count. It was a bit of a risk. Could have made it worse, but it did help. And so then it would be just exactly 30 minutes, no more, back on the dot. But 30 minutes, I'm out of the house, alone, getting into my own rhythm in the lovely nature. Whatever weather, whatever time of day it was possible to get out of the house. And so I noticed different kinds of ways of getting into a rhythm, depending on the day, the weather, what else had happened, what time, what else had happened earlier that day, etc. What was still to come. And one of it did help my back, but it mostly helped my mind. It was my mind flush. And I know, apparently, or I've heard, and I believe, that it is a chemical thing that happens. And sometimes the most helpful was going the way where the steep hill comes first, instead of going the way where it's flat for a while. And I noticed that near the top of the steep hill, so after a few minutes only, it was more of a flush sooner, getting into that kind of a rhythm sooner. So maybe with our meditation, we could be even more patient and also trust that maybe there is a natural process of getting into a rhythm that maybe has several steps that happen and also might be a little bit different every time. Does that make sense? A little bit or not or yes? Some of it is, like for me with jogging, this wonderful way that even if I didn't jog for however, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years in between. But I used to jog before. And crazy, it's really crazy. It isn't so much about really getting back in shape. It's not having to do it all again. But some kind of remembering of what we did do before. So there are some teachings that I'm curious, I'm very curious. Because I notice a certain kind of quality in certain teachings that it's kind of like full color. You can ask a word if you want.
Curious.
You're curious about the meaning of curious. I wonder what the meaning of curious is. I really want to know. Let's see. I'm curious. So what could it be in German or Dutch? Whenever you're curious, feel free to ask yourself or me or whatever, anybody. So this is a little bit of an aside, something that I'm curious about, where certain people seem to give teachings that are kind of, to me, full color. There's not a, they don't seem to end here, and here's the package. And so I find in the way that the teachings of Chögyam Trungpa are given to us through books, which I know is not just him. It's also his Sangha, how they transcribed and edited the talks. But for me, there is that, an unlimited space that comes about for me when reading his teachings. And then also knowing that he was like a dangerous kind of person, that I'm glad I didn't meet him, actually. Maybe now I could possibly take a meeting with him. Maybe not. Not just for the, like, oh, he's such a powerful, but he would like touch women, whether they asked or said yes or no. And I'm not sure I would have had that no in me. I wouldn't have for a long time. Maybe now it would come. After all these years in India. That I got a little more freed up with my arm. From my niceness training in the United States. So, by the way, I'm curious about that. Very curious. And, yeah.
Can you just quickly say what you mean with full color?
Yes, I can try. I think there's probably way more than one thing going on. But I think one thing that's going on is even though he's only teaching because people need the teachings, he's not interested in selling anything. And he's not just going down to our level where we can understand easily. He's talking where he feels like talking, and assuming something in us can hear it, even if it's like disturbing, or even if it's disturbing. So I think that's part of it. So he gave advice to artists saying, instead of like notice very much who is your audience, he said, doesn't matter who your audience is. How is your art expressing itself? And be your own audience at first, and then the audience will come up to that level. Which could so easily be, maybe it is, but it could so easily be arrogance, and but maybe it would if it isn't. Like we could take the same word, same teachings, and be arrogant about it. Or just come to my level. I'm so high. You don't understand me because I'm so high, not because I'm not clear. It could easily be like that. But okay, one thing that might be interesting about now, like day by day, the Dharma teachings are getting more and more conceptualized, consumerized, sold, bought. So that hardly we find a situation that that's not the case. And just as we accept that as if it's inevitable, that means there's no other way, but that we're going to have to buy a new phone every year instead of every 3 years, just because what to do? The companies, you know, they're not letting us, you know. They really are making the old iPhone slower so that you'll buy the new phone. Yeah, they are. Oh, well. Like, so we're accepting this watering down, this selling of teachings. And also, we hardly have a chance to know another way, another taste of it. So, the contrast, when there's a moment of learning together that's not about selling something, that's not about agreeing or saying something in a way that's pre-digested so that you'll come back next week because I might be paying my rent by this, you know, so. And I don't really trust, so I got to get you to come back. So maybe a good thing about this terrible situation is that by contrast, it really is exhilarating, like that would be like fresh air. Shocking, but maybe in such a good way. When someone isn't trying to get my attention, that isn't trying to make me come back to like them, to look for some sort of deal where if I do this number of weeks of practice, then I'm going to get, my blood pressure is going to go down 2 points and my, you know. So that willingness not to be liked, that willingness to be disturbing, it doesn't mean that everybody who's disturbing is. So it's very, very, very tricky.
So colorful is disturbing? I still don't get what is colorful.
Yeah. Well, I'm also thinking maybe if I read I have one or two quotations, maybe that will just do it. But anyway, and the quotations are about this, so we will get there, but I'm just waiting to see if some other way comes. Yeah, okay. So, this is a long way around, but it's also in my notes for today, so we'll go with it. A lot of people that I know, this is about water heaters. A lot of people that I know don't know any other way to get themselves clean than with the help of a water heater. And it has become so obvious to them that the water heater is there, and that the temperature is like this temperature so that I can get clean. that when the water heater doesn't work, it doesn't enter their mind for 1 second any other way of getting clean. I can't take a bath because the water heater is broken. And it's so easy, like, oh no, you poor thing. On your wedding day, oh my God, and you had shampoo in your hair, and how are you gonna get the shampoo out of your hair? The water heater is not working. Oh my God, you poor thing. It's so believable that she has to call the electrician with the water in her hair. I mean, the shampoo in her hair, not the water, no water in her hair, cold water. Don't touch the cold water. And also because we have, she has never bathed in cold water in her life. It could be my cousin. It could be a bad idea to rinse her hair with cold water because her body's not accustomed to that at that point after decades. So how easy when there's a convenience. And I love a hot shower. But how easy when there's a convenience that what happens is a physical laziness, dare I say, or a certain kind of physical training, which is to have hot water only, always. It might be, you know, 45 degrees outside, but I'm going to have a hot shower inside. And this is not ridiculous to us. And if we bring it up, it's like, oh, I don't want to make you feel guilty, but... And it's, I'm so not going the guilt way. That doesn't work anyway, but it's completely pointless. What's interesting is what happens in contact with cold water. Whoa. Like, cool. Nice. Do I look forward to the cold bath in the morning? I don't. Is it good? Yes. Is a hot bath good? Yes. But something to be taken into consideration, to be considered seriously. When there's a convenience, how easily we go one direction only, that we become dependent on the convenience. We take it for granted. We no longer appreciate hot water and cold water. And we no longer notice the effect on the mind of the warm water and the effect on the mind of the cold water. And stay alive to the feeling intuitively of which effect, which one of those is in the flow of the day. Only one is acceptable anymore. And slowly that becomes true physically. There's a physical dependence on. What was a convenience is now essential. And so, it becomes burdensome to consider the cost of that for the planet, for other people, even for myself, which is the closest to home. It's so inconvenient to consider the cost for myself, and then much less beyond that. And so let's stay with the cost a little bit, even though it's like, so easily, we just feel guilty, shut down, end of conversation. All the many ways of everything that has such a cost that we don't want to consider. So I love the poet Wendell Berry, who also writes essays and fiction. And already decades ago, he lives in an area where there's coal mining, mountaintop removal, coal mining. And he's seen over decades what happens, where they just take that off, put it to the side. The company doesn't have to do, they just let that then falls onto the actual homes of families who are also washed down. And no one, that's, oh, bye. And so it's not just about fighting it or like, oh, lamenting it or whatever. But he feels that if he uses electricity, he's using coal. Like the connection is in his bloodstream, and so he doesn't turn on the light at night. He works during the daylight hours. It's such a simple thing, and I love that. But if we would do it because we're trying to, that also doesn't work. And yet we also don't want to live next to the mountaintop coal removal, and we don't want there to be mountaintop coal removal. So then, so what? And I think in a way, there's just like such an easy way for it to make sense to us. If we open to how wonderful it is to live without turning the light on at night. Not because anything, except it's wonderful. It's such a relief. It's so good. There's a guy who has something called the brand Green Meditation that's basically that. What about not turning on the lights at night? That's all. And I love that someone sent me this article, and I couldn't believe I was reading this, because that place that we made when the babies and blah, 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 like, there's only spring water. So if you're going to take a bath, you're going to take a bath in spring water, and there's plenty because it's spring water. It's not then going somewhere else, so don't waste it. It's kind of a crazy situation. There's that much only, but all the time. And so there's more than you could possibly use. So, and you can swim in the little pond now that's spring water. Such a luxury. And so, but I'm not living there now. I'm living half an hour away in the place where my son has school. And when we get there and get out of the car, and so I realized that we could do, this could be some sort of therapy, just be in natural light, starlight, moonlight, sunlight at different times of day. Just that is such a relief for the body, for the mind, for how the body acts on the mind, for how the mind acts on the body. It's beautiful. And there's not that thing about how am I going to get to sleep because I've been in the electric light until 10 o'clock at night, and so my body thinks it's noon. It's the candlelight, it's firelight, like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, I'm so tired. And so this green meditation guy talks about a study. There was a scientist, isn't it wonderful when a scientist has this great idea of a study of getting people to agree to submit to 14 hours of darkness during winter time. So it would be like a winter time, not at the equator. So it's dark, and you're in the dark for 14 hours for 1 month. And you'll recognize what he saw, what happened in the study. But they had 1 month instead of 7 days. So, okay. For the first 3 weeks, they were exhausted and they slept 11 hours on average. So that means there were people who were sleeping more than 11 hours and maybe people sleeping less than 11 hours. But they were sleeping for 11 hours. And the rest of the time, they were hanging out in bed. 2 hours hanging out in bed. And then suddenly, they were asleep for 11 hours. And then when they got rested, the pattern changed, if I remember well, something like this. Eventually, the pattern changed. to where they were sleeping for 8 hours. I'm pretty sure I have this accurate. But it wasn't 8 hours in a row. It was 2 hours hanging out in bed in the dark, sleeping about 4 hours, waking up, doing some stuff in the dark, and then again sleeping for 4 hours. If we were here for a month, it would happen to you too. The 8 hour sleep that we think of as the Holy Grail, as like, that's what we need to achieve and stick to, is an industrial invention. Because that's convenient for making the iPhone that's then gonna be inconveniently for us and conveniently for the company, too slow to use anymore after 1 year.
There is a historical research which confirms that, like 300 years ago, you can read in the literature.
Yes.
I slept the first sleep, and then yes. I slept the second sleep.
Yes.
Which means they had the one sleep, break, getting up, and then going back
yes.
to sleep.
Exactly. Could you hear that? First sleep, second sleep. It's not my invention. It's not my discovery either. But recovering that, the treasure of in between the first and second sleep, recovering sleep at all, actually, first of all. Sleep that actually, a rich sleep. Not like a sleep.
What kind of sleep is that?
It's the kind of sleep that you probably sleep. Unless you're sleeping, first sleep, awake, quietly, maybe yoga, meditation, mantra, writing a letter that suddenly you remember to write, and then back to sleep. It's an industrial sleep, probably, that we sleep until we recover our rhythm, which is probably about 4 hours and then a gap and about 4 hours. And the sacred quality of the time in between and the richness into the cells of the sleep. Especially, I find the second sleep has a different quality. Have you noticed anything to report on? About the second sleep, especially. I'm looking at Lila G because she was on a 2-month retreat that we had many years ago when I didn't have kids. Did you want to say something?
Oh, I've been waking up every night in the morning at 3:30 for 4 days, but yeah.
Yeah.
Waking up, flying around, and doing that just like.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Do you want to repeat or I repeat?
I've just noticed that I've been waking up every morning at 3:30 here and then going and kind of being awake for a bit and then going back to sleep.
Sometimes it's it can be fun to play with different things. Sometimes waking up, whether you think you're waking up because you have to pee or because you have a nightmare or whatever you think, but you're waking up and it's 11 o'clock or 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Having a bath. Ooh, psh, psh, cold, because the guy's not there yet. Or little water or little fresh air and then back to bed. Or a little yoga and then back to bed. So one recommendation is to play with water, some kind of movement, yoga, fresh air. Maybe you feel like meditating, maybe not. Back to bed. Maybe a little mantra in there, whatever word you want to repeat, doesn't matter. And then back to bed. Also, the lying around in bed can be so good. And this is another aspect of getting into our rhythm that can be so challenging for us. The push for us to be busy and so-called productive, which would be making products that we recognize as saleable basically, valued by other people. Can be very strong. And yet sometimes that lying around, not quite getting up, is a really important part of getting into our own rhythm. And so feel the thoughts that can come of like, is this laziness? What is this laziness? What is this tiredness of just lying around? And it can be a nice time to do Jenshin Jitsu, by the way, while you're lying around. Not to be productive, but just the hand, let the hands go somewhere and let them stay and then let them move. Or to quiet down that part that wants you to be productive. Okay, I'm doing Jenshin. So lay off. And it can be months or even years of lying around and being really of two minds about it. I think this is lazy, I think this is a waste of time, but I can't get up. If you have a history of depression, that might be something else, okay? But if you don't, maybe giving some chance. And even if you have a history of depression, you might feel, in your best honesty, this is not the same. This is not a kind of shutdown. This is not like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be alive. There's something else. But it can be very hard to tell the difference. But at some time, you might start to notice that the quality of mind in that kind of laziness, just lying around in bed, the quality of mind is the best quality of mind in the whole day, in the sense that you know what's important, both in a practical level and every other level. What needs to come to mind can come to mind. And as soon as you sit up, sometimes it's gone. Sometimes. So that might be a way of getting a feeling for, after a few months of lazing around and wondering, is it lazy, is it tired, what is this? If you start to realize that that's when your insights come, both in terms of what you need to do today that you've been putting off for 10 years, and I'm not actually exaggerating so much at all. The unwiring of that pushiness towards busyness can be that long and hard because we're so bought into the busyness. It's not that it would be that hard if we would be surrounded by people who were lazing around in this healthy way, it would probably be really quick. So first day of retreat, 3:30, she's awake. Because it's a deep rest retreat. So, and I'm not saying that you should anything, including that you should stay in bed. Sometimes it could be important to get out of bed and go somewhere that your heart feels to go. Maybe the hall. Maybe the small temple hall. Maybe the field, etc. I don't mean to be simplistic and just trying to say this simple thing. So sometimes part of recovering our rhythm and I've now come around to the one of the Trungpa quotations can literally be, and often on a deep rest retreat it is, actually remembering yourself as a child. Sometimes as in a more dreamlike way or in a dream, and sometimes just simply, oh yeah. So he says, when you were very young, 3 years old, you didn't want to look into the possibility of escape. So he sometimes takes a lot of words. When you were very young, 3 years old, you weren't trying to escape. That's what he's saying. You didn't want to look into the possibility of escape. Because you were so interested in how things were done. Why is this so? Why do we do this? Why don't we do that? So that's one childlike quality of curiosity, inquisitiveness, that can take us into connection with not just aliveness in some abstract way, but the substance of things, the richness of what is here. The richness of coal, electricity, water, energy. And so he also he talks about fearlessness in a piece called Joining Heaven and Earth, in a book called Smile at Fear, Awakening the True Heart of Bravery. Smile at Fear, Joining Heaven and Earth. Fearlessness contains a feeling of joy and relaxation or well-being. So let's just like pause and don't let it be abstract. A moment where there was less fear. We can use it that way. Not fearlessness, 100%, but less fearness. Less worried about what they think of me, what I think of them, what's for dinner, what was, etc. Less interested in the possibility of escape. When it's in a way very, very obvious, when there's less fear, there might be some room for joy and relaxation or well-being. But isn't that interesting? From the point of view of fear, we're not buying that. We think we have to make joy. We have to buy joy, just like there's a cost to fear. We're going to have to work for the joy. But actually, when there's less fear, there is joy and relaxation and well-being. From the goodness of simply being yourself, or I've been talking about being with yourself, or in yourself, or in your body, or in your life. From the goodness of simply being yourself, a quality of upliftedness arises. Upliftedness? Feeling lifted up? So sometimes it's actually a feeling of not being so in my bubble, in my shell. There's actually a feeling aware of what's above your head, feeling taller, I could say, more tree-like. Or simply lighter. So from the goodness of simply being yourself, a quality of upliftedness arises, which is not overly solemn or religious. Solemn would be when I'm very serious. Religious. It is joyful to experience that you are alive. You are here. You appreciate, he's actually talking about appreciation. There was more in the quotation where it says, it is joyful to experience your good health. So whatever amount of health you have, relatively, extremely good health, you're here. It is good, it is joyful to feel that. And so in a way, what he's saying, he's not spelling it out here, but joy is that sign of being fully in. Rather than, I'm kind of here, but I'm kind of checking out, is this okay or not? I'm just here. In and of itself, that feels good. That's what was missing. The part that was watching me to stop watching me, to come, just be with it, be in it. Does that make sense? That's in a way like that's sort of it. That's it. You appreciate colors, and the temperature of the air. You appreciate smells and sounds. You begin to use your eyes, your ears, your nose, and your tongue to explore the world. So in a way, he's talking about actually coming back to a kind of baby level, but without the childishness. It's this very mature, very baby. To use your tongue, so then we're like so serious and religious, to use my tongue to explore the world. Only in the privacy of my small bubble where no one can see me. And we could just get into pretense. As long as no one can see me exploring the world with my tongue, I might consider the idea. But I won't actually do it for a few more years. It's like lying down. Sometimes people come on retreat for a few years before they actually lie down, which is fine. You have never seen such penetrating and extraordinary red before. For the first time, you see such cool and beautiful blue. For the first time, you see such warm and delicate yellow. I just want to pause. And this is like this huge Vajrayana Rinpoche talking like this about colors, one by one. He's not in a hurry to get to the real point. You see such refreshing, earthy, wet green. Such pure, clean, white. As though you are opening your mouth and breathing out at once. At the same time. What is that? That's not. It's what we've been talking about all day. That we don't dare to do. That is all we need to do. That makes it not the long way around. But all that, yes, complicated programming that continually catches you, but is all. For the first time, you see such wonderful black. It's so trustworthy that you can almost sleep on it. It has a sheen, which we'll come back to that word, which reminds you of stroking a black horse. So sheen would be where it's kind of got some layers. There's the deep underneath black that's sort of bottomless, and on the surface some reflecting of white light. So it's not a mirror, and it's not just bottomless black, a sheen. It's not quite shiny, but it's like a black horse in the sun. Letting it come along to you. And not trying to make a big deal out of it. Noticing the trying. And isn't it cool? Like then it's like, oh yes, that quality of trying that has. And then we can feel the quality of trying and the richness of that experience. in another place altogether, but same stream, he says, the possibility of freshness, is always here. He actually says it's always there, but your mind is never totally contaminated by your neuroses. So contaminated would be polluted, messed up by, dirtied, ruined. Your mind is never totally covered up or destroyed or messed up or dirtied. It's never totally dirtied by your neuroses, by your programming, by your strategy, by your defensiveness, by your certainty that you're not enough or something's wrong. Goodness is always here. Catch it on the spot. But what he means is let it catch you. But this is already a few decades ago, and we've already gotten even more like sensitive trigger. And so we to catch it, sometimes we could be like that relaxed that we let something catch it. But mostly let it catch you. Let the richness kind of happen to you. And so that means that preparation of this alarm system, soothing the alarm system, so that we're ready to let life be rich and without needing it to be rich, without ready to use the richness for something. Just the richness in and of itself would be another So I know it's a lot, but I really feel to read this one more poem. And then we're not going to talk about the poem. We'll just let it be there. And we may or may not get to it tomorrow. We might just let it be there. It's called Ask Me by William Stafford, who's a 20th century US poet. Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden. And there are comings and goings from miles away that hold the stillness exactly before us. What the river says, that is what I say. May our practice and lives have a dedication to what is important, precious, rich, and sweet. Falling into place, into the momentum of awakening now for all, including ourselves.